If you're listening to this, there's a good chance you work within the real estate investing industry. There's another good chance that you would like to increase the sales of your products or services.
Well, you're in the right place.
United States Real Estate Investor is a platform you need to place your brand directly in front of your target audience. With our focused, growing audience of real estate investing beginners, enthusiasts, and seasoned professionals, you can continually reach our captivated viewers and listeners with ease. To learn more or to get started today, just visit UnitedStatesRealEstateInvestor.com/advertising. That's UnitedStatesRealEstateInvestor.com/advertising. Get ready to increase your brand awareness and your bottom line. Attract clients with content.
Welcome to This Month in Real Estate Investing, guys. In this episode, we'll be covering a variety of news items, including tiny houses mean towering hassles in getting a mortgage. Las Vegas ranks highest in home foreclosures across the country. And Dolce and Gabbana's first ever real estate project is a skyscraper with an elaborate gold crown. All this and more on this episode of This Month in Real Estate Investing. Let's start the show. Hey guys, hopefully I wasn't muted for that intro. I just realized my mic was muted. Anyway, I'm your host, James Brown, and I show people how to make safe double-digit returns through our hybrid investing model. Go to hybridinvestor.vip to learn more. If you're watching live, feel free to comment and ask questions. Our guests today are Jeremy Beland. Is that how you say it?
Jeremy Beland.
Beland. All right. And Ethan Gao, I already got that one figured out how to pronounce it. In that order, why don't you guys introduce yourselves, share a little bit about your background and what types of investing you guys are focused on.
Yeah, right on, man. Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's a great honor. I really appreciate the opportunity today to talk to your listeners. So I'm happy to be here. My name is Jeremy Beland. I'm from up in New Hampshire. You're going to hear a thick Boston accent come out, but I am a New Englander. These are my companies back here, New Hampshire Home Buyers, REI Freedom, Coastal Florida Home Buyers. REI Freedom is our off-market acquisition coaching program that we have, and the other two are our house buying companies. So my wife and I, we started in New Hampshire back in January 2017. We've grown into many markets since then, but we're just down to two markets these days. And basically what we do is we focus on off-market property acquisitions. Originally, we started out as wholesalers, but over time, we started getting into flips, buy and hold, and things of that nature. Now we have multiple exit strategies in everything we do. That's one of the things that we teach. But you know, everything we do all day and every day is acquire properties direct from the seller, and that's what we focus on.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
My pleasure.
Ethan, you're up, and you're muted.
Hey everybody, I'm Ethan Gao here in Houston, Texas. No, this background is not my actual house. My actual background is a printer with a bunch of vitamins and random stuff like that. I have been in real estate 9 years. I started my career as a corporate attorney on Wall Street doing mergers and acquisitions. I actually lived in Boston for 2 years when my wife went to business school there. Did not pick up any sort of accent and still cannot really understand the accent, to be honest. Fortunately, I didn't have a car there, so I didn't have to drive around and, you know, get hit by random people. I live in Houston now. My wife and I have 5 kids. We met the first day of class in college. I still actively practice law, and I'm a life insurance agent through a registered investment advisor. The stuff that I do in real estate these days tends to be specialty, special situations lending, as well as credit enhancement. So a lot of times in commercial and multifamily real estate, if the lead sponsors don't have a certain net worth or a certain amount of liquidity, they can't qualify for the loan. That's when I get brought in so that my net worth and liquidity gets added to the pot, and then they can qualify to getting the loan. Typically, the lenders require that the lead sponsors have net worth that exceeds the loan amount, as well as liquidity that's approximately 10% of the loan amount. On the specialty lending side, what we do is we look for sponsors that are short on their fundraising, primarily because somebody backs out last minute. So let's say you needed to raise $10 million on your deal, and one of your big investors backs out 2 weeks before, and they say, hey, sorry, I'm not bringing my $3 million in anymore. In that situation, you might have a lot of earnest money at risk. You might not want to return $7 million back to your investors and tell them, hey, I couldn't get this done, I'm sorry. It's probably just easier for you to borrow $3 million from me, and then you would have up to 6 months to raise the money to pay me back after closing. So that's something we've done many times. It's a little bit of a side hustle, side business for us. And when I started in real estate 9 years ago, I did traditional hard money lending. So I lent money to people fixing and flipping houses in Houston. I've done probably over 500 loans.
Wow. Very impressive.
That is a mouthful. And that's interesting too. You know, I'm starting to raise funds for like multifamily syndications, that sort of thing. And having people back out at the last minute, kind of like our fourth guest today, can really throw a wrench into the works, right? So,
absolutely. And it happens in any market. People are always like, well, are you busier now? I mean, I guess. But this happens all the time for all kinds of random reasons. So the advice I always give people is just over-raise money, because you don't want to be short. It's better to have more and just cut people back instead of not having enough. And then you got to be super stressed the last couple of weeks before closing. I literally got two calls yesterday for deals that are closing tomorrow and Friday. And we're not able to do them that fast with the current workload that we have. So that's a terrible position to be in.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy. Well, thanks guys for being here today. And let's dive into the news. So first item from The Real Deal: pair accused of $1 million embezzlement of real estate firm in Del Mar. Just as a kind of a summary, Julie Blease and her sibling Colin Miller were arrested. They were property managing, and so they were embezzling rental funds. So they are in jail with a $500,000 bail set. So, and looking at possibly up to 27 years in prison.
That's interesting. I'm not a litigation guy or a criminal guy, but here in Houston, because I've been in real estate so long, I have known of people, and this is confirmed, it's not really conjecture. Like I've looked at the evidence, I've met the people. They have been running frauds for years and nobody prosecutes them. So I guess it must be really state by state and who's in political power and who wants to bother. I mean, I know minor criminals here in Houston running millions of dollars of schemes across a long period of time that have not gotten into any real trouble at all.
Interesting. You know, I've came across an experience here in New Hampshire where a condo company where we've, you know, flipped quite a few properties over the years out of locally, prior to probably, the Great Recession, this property management company, they didn't really take the rents, but they basically took the condo fees for many, many years. And then they end up just taking like all the money and running. And I don't know if they ever got caught, but what happened was that everybody that was putting these condo fees into, for the maintenance of these properties ended up really in trouble because they were out like years and years and years of condo fees to a point where these places really just were just hit really hard from lack of, all the neglect and just lack of maintenance. And they just deteriorated over, about 10 years. And they became like, I don't want to say like projects because they really weren't, but they really came so run down, the values plummeted on them. And it really hasn't been until like the last few years, thanks to the great market, really bringing their value back. They were super, super cheap for a really long time. We had some great success in them. But as a result, their condo fees are super, super high compared to other ones in the area. And, you know, it's always been one special assessment after another because they're basically spending, you know, a decade or more trying to dig out of that situation. So it just shows you like how bad that can happen to people actually live there, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm dealing with that. Not exactly the same situation, but helping a friend list his condo, and the HOA has just been neglected for years. They got a huge debt, can't get FHA financing on it because of that, and too many renters versus owners in there. And I'm having a hard, we're under contract, but had a hard time finding somebody that wanted to buy it because they saw that it was just run down because they weren't doing what they needed. And they have recently jacked up the HOA fee to compensate for that. I don't think it was mismanaged or embezzling or anything, but they had to bump it up. So buyers are coming in and going, why is this $455 a month? Yeah. And it looks like crap around here. So interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, and it makes it really tough with the raising interest rates, right? So now you have your home buyer trying to buy a house and says, I qualify for X, but now the condo fees basically say, I can't afford that, which, you know, hasn't really hurt the values of these properties. But we had a condo association property that we sold a year ago when the interest rates originally hit, and it dropped like $50,000 overnight in the initial panic of everything. They've stabilized and are actually much more in value now. But that's tough. You know, those condo fees make it really, really tough. A lot of times when we sold those houses, we've had to like prepay as part of the closing. Like we'll pay the, you know, special assessment for a year. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've got another buddy going to list his condo $650 for that one.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. Like,
yeah,
I talked to a gal that kind of, she does a lot of flips in that building, and she's got the lowest price one right now. It's just sitting.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. I was also going to mention too, you know, these property management companies, you know, if anybody's dealt with them, they might start out good and then they start kind of slacking and maybe adding fees in and stuff. And like I mentioned at the beginning, like what I do, we have our hybrid investing model where we're partnering with investors. And so we're in total alignment. Like if we can save money, do things right, you know, we're not doing any upcharges because we're on the same side of the table, you know, it makes a huge difference compared to hiring property management companies.
Yeah, I feel like they're a lot like contractors, right? So you really have to vet them really well. And sometimes you get referrals and they still don't come to be what you expect them to be. As we started getting into smaller multifamily acquisition here in New England, we referred to some property managers, you know, different than like a condo association type property manager, but needless to say, both were terrible. And I literally lost tens and tens of thousands of dollars, between, you know, COVID and the years after that. And you know, now we're fortunate to have a really strong property management company, but they're hard to come by. And, you know, and I think, you know, sometimes people who run HOAs, they don't really know much, you know, they're just people that may not have a lot of real estate experience as well. You know, I've never been part of an HOA, nor do I plan to be, but, you know, yeah, property managers, I think that's tough. And I'm not surprised there's a lot of people stealing and getting away with it. Like, Ethan was saying, you know, it's just like mechanics and contractors, you know, they easily take advantage of the people that don't know anything, especially if you're not paying attention.
Yep.
Nope. Yeah, I live in a nice suburb here in Houston, and the HOA here, it's full of you know, like upper middle class professionals and stuff. But if you ever just have nothing to do and you want to see a bunch of drama, just log into your neighborhood Facebook HOA. Like we literally pay all these fees, and our pool is never available and it's never clean. Yeah. Like somehow, you know, hundreds if not thousands of houses here pay $1,000 a year and our pool is not available. And then it's literally just people posting about why it's not available and you know, why it was this other guy's fault on the board and not their fault. And I'm like, just get the stupid pool like to work. Literally nobody cares. Maybe that should be the platform I run on. Like, I will get the pool to open.
There you go.
And I will do nothing else. Don't even call me. This is the only thing I'm going to do. And then you're going to have to pay me. Like, none of this work for free crap.
I'm sure the Houston Heat, that will be a game changer for you. I would vote for you.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be a good item. I know this condo I'm trying to sell, the pool has been shut down for 2 years. Yeah. Pretty much the entire year, my friend has lived there. Yeah. That's insane. And this is Denver. It does get hot, you know, but not like a Houston. But people like their pools in the summer.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, let's jump into the next news item from The Real Deal. Why multifamily developers are having a brutal year in L.A. High land, labor costs, land and labor costs, stringent local regulations, and a new transfer tax called Measure ULA are making it really expensive to build there. And it did mention, too, that there's a tax aimed at the city's homeless crisis, which is adding a 4 to 5.5% surcharge on property deals over 5 million. So those big projects. So that's all those things added up have made it really difficult. So Ethan, have you done any investing in projects in LA or California in
general? Yeah, absolutely not. And that's just another reason to stay away. There's, you know, it's kind of like if you don't have to do that there, I don't really know why you'd bother. Like, unless you're from there or you're really plugged in, it's just if you are starting with a blank slate, I don't really know why you would choose to go there versus like the Southeast or the Southwest.
Right. So much California money coming this way.
Couldn't agree more. We've been out to LA and San Diego a few times the last couple of years for real estate masterminds and different things like that. And it blows my mind. You know, the homelessness there is just crazy. It's like nothing I've seen in any other part of the country. And, you know, I feel bad for a lot of those businesses that, you know, own down in the city. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about San Francisco potentially as well. You know, California should be ashamed of themselves. You know, if they want to have rent control, but here they're going to tax somebody who wants to buy more property and develop to house people, which we obviously know we have a housing crisis in this country, and they're making it really, you know, not affordable for anybody. I agree with Ethan. I don't know why anybody would want to even deal with California. I know the shows on TV make it glamorous that you can make, like, you know, high six figures and seven figure returns. But, you know, if you buy a property, you have to sit a year or two just to get the permit approved to start doing anything. I feel like there's money to easily be made somewhere else.
Yeah, those delays are deal killers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. California is just a mess. I mean, it's a beautiful state, and I know a lot of people love it, but I can't imagine wanting to live there or do any business there. I just, unless you had so much money, it didn't matter. I can't imagine.
Yeah. Very tenant friendly state too. So it's tough on landlords, which is, I'm in Denver. It's going that direction for sure. And, you know, there's good reasons, good laws, you know, to protect them from bad landlords, but there's a lot of good landlords and, you know, a high percentage of landlords are mom and pop people that's their retirement plan, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't agree more. You know, we did business in New York State for a couple of years and had some great success, but learned quickly that it's not, you know, an investor friendly state. Some people can do really well there and choose to, but, you know, we decided to relocate down to Florida, and we are just as successful, if not more. And the path is so much easier. We own some rental families and single families up in New York, and I hope that I can sell them. I'm just waiting for some more equity to get out of them before I 1031 exchange them. But, you know, up there, man, if COVID or something like that happens again and they don't pay a rent, there's nothing you can do. You're just going to sit and wait years on end with nothing. And, you know, it's tough. And now if you're in California and the properties I own out there are like $100,000 for a single family, you know, you're talking big, big money in California where you're not getting any rent or any help. I just can't even imagine.
Yep. Well, hey, let's jump into the next news again from California. It just happened, a bunch of California stuff right off the bat. San Francisco's doom loop, commercial vacancies amid pandemic fallout. This is from the United States Real Estate Investor news feed. Just a couple notes. They have a 31% vacancy rate, which is the highest in the nation. They did note that there's like a barber renegotiated his rent based on his monthly sales falling $48,000 behind what he had been. So if you can't pay the rent, you know, the landlords who are in a tough spot are going to have to make some adjustments too. So.
Yeah. I feel like California's struggle bus right now. And, you know, I've heard a lot about the, situation in San Francisco. My wife and I were actually thinking about going out there and visiting. And as we started to hear more and more, not only are people leaving there because of the cost, but again, the homelessness is really, really high there compared to years in the past from what I've been told. Again, I don't live there, but I heard the crime is getting really bad there and that it's preventing a lot of businesses from wanting to do business there, like big box chain retailers. I heard even Starbucks closed some locations downtown because they feared the safety of their personnel. I mean, if it's getting to a point where you not only can't make money there, but you're in jeopardy of, you know, endangering your own staff, San Francisco's, I think it's going to get much worse before it gets better there. And I'm not really sure what they're going to do.
Yeah. You know, in the article, it said there's 7,000 quote unquote unhoused individuals.
Yeah.
Homeless people. That's, and you hear about feces around the city. I've heard of that for years. That's
yeah,
a health issue too, right?
When we're in San Diego, we were outside of a, you know, obviously they have tents that they build them out like right on the sidewalk in front of people's businesses, and the business owners can't do anything. And yeah, like, you know, you may be a restaurant where you're serving food and people are literally going in the bathroom right outside the front door and there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, you walk in the morning and to some of these places and the sidewalks are just absolutely disgusting and horrendous. Again, you know, it's more of a California thing because it's not just San Francisco, it's LA, San Diego. And, you know, then you have the high crime and, you know, and the people feeling endangered or, you know, it's a tough situation. I would not invest in anywhere in California, but especially these cities. And I think we'll probably see those vacancies increase in San Francisco because I know it's more politically involved in that stuff. And I don't want to go down like all that stuff. Cause it's not really my wheelhouse of knowledge, but you know, I don't see anything changing there anytime soon. And I don't think there's any quick fix. It's going to take a while to dig out of that.
Yeah. Well, the article says it could take up to a decade to recover.
Imagine that.
Maybe
more. Great San Francisco.
Yeah. They also mentioned, a developer, Mark Babson, is converting office space to residential units, which we've talked about on this show quite a bit. All those office spaces are trying to figure out what to do. So they're either converting to residential or they're converting to like light industrial storage.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out something, you know.
They should just dump all the homeless people in and make the government pay for it.
That would be the day, right? Somehow we'd still have to pay for it, but yeah, that'd be a quick fix.
It'd be like, hey, here's 100 hobos, put them in this office building and see what they do. It's not being used anyways.
Burn it. Yeah, the other thing is
they'll probably burn it down or make it into like some sort of like exchange market for like STDs and needles and drugs. Yeah.
You know, I unfortunately feel like there's so much red tape too. Like even if you wanted to convert office space into other things, I know, you know, you guys probably have some experience with zoning laws at the smaller local levels. It can be really tough to just get, you know, variations approved at your local town hall. I can't imagine, you know, the red tape and palms you would have to grease to get an office building converted into self-storage or something like that. I feel like that sounds great, but I just, again, sounds a lot easier than probably reality. I feel like unless the city is getting paid a lot of money in some incentivized way, they're like, yeah, no, we don't care. It doesn't affect us. It can stay there. We're still getting our tax money.
Yeah. It's not just permitting. I mean, the logistics and cost of like converting something where you have to put in bathrooms in every office. Like, holy smokes. I mean, is it worth it? You just tear down the building?
I know. Go and spend $1 million converting it into like a self-storage unit, and then just finding out that more people have left the city, and now nobody even wants to go there for storage. I mean, this food. I mean, these cities, I mean, they've done it to themselves. You know, we are down in Florida, and obviously Florida has homeless as well as New Hampshire. But you don't see it like you do in California. You know, they just, you know, it's just different. They're allowed to do certain things that other states around the country just don't allow it. And, you know, you get what you give, I guess. So they're going to have to deal with it now.
Yeah. Even Hawaii's got a really bad problem now, at least on Oahu. A friend of mine just got back. He's like, within the last couple of years, it's just gone crazy. Like, there's one beach section. They just took over, you know, like the public bathrooms for the beach. They've got hoses, like octopus style coming off the water source to, like, there's a nice place to live, but come on, in
those circumstances. We have a town, a small city here in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire has always been somewhat of a conservative state, right? Live free to die. But as most of New England has kind of changed in recent years, and we have the city that, you know, 10 years ago, it was never a great city. You know, obviously it has this crime like anything else, but the homelessness and meth users have literally decided to take over the whole city, where, you know, you can't even go to any, you know, you can't go to parks anymore because they're all in the parks. The cops don't move them. There's needles everywhere. You know, it was like that in Rochester, New York, when we were doing stuff up there. Like, you know, we had houses that were listed on the MLS and they're vacant, and people would break into them every night, and the homeless, and then the cops would come and tell the person to leave. As soon as the cops left, they went right back in. It cost you thousands of dollars of damage. And you're like, please just close this property so I don't have to pay any more money and damage, because vacant property is just easy prey. And that's what it's like in this Manchester thing as well. And, you know, not to keep it political, but, you know, they all seem to fall into the same political side, unfortunately. And I think they need to start looking at that stuff a little more clearer, because it's affecting the average citizen who maybe doesn't have any political affiliates to either side.
Yeah.
So now that we've alienated everybody that likes California and also liberals, we move on to the next topic.
Yeah.
I think they're all dropping off the call right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sorry, Californians.
I love California, by the way, outside of that stuff. Yeah.
Outside of all these major problems, it's phenomenal.
From Benzinga, tiny houses mean towering hassles in getting a mortgage. So I guess tiny homes are defined as 500 square feet or less, and prices range from $30,000 to $60,000. So the problem is that traditional mortgages often have a minimum loan amount starting at $50,000 and require permanent foundations. So financing them is a problem. You guys got any comments or experience in tiny homes?
Yeah, I mostly see them in connection with like RV parks and mobile home parks. So agreed. This is just one of those things where I acknowledge the existence of this thing, but I don't personally get it. Like, I would never want this product, but people seem to make money doing it. So there must be some sort of way to do it. Maybe that's owner finance or specialty lenders where you finance like a bunch of them at the same time. There must be a way, because there's people that focus on it and seem to be making money.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have cash, they probably be a good rental income property. But I agree, they're more like RVs and mobile homes. We have a lot of, I don't know if you guys do where you are, I'm sure you do, but a lot of mobile home parks that we deal with. And, you know, you can get financing for the newer mobile homes. But, you know, anything that's like older than 20 years, they typically don't do. So, you know, if you're trying to sell like a 1990 something mobile home in a really nice park, and the mobile home might be nice, you really need a cash buyer, because most banks won't lend on it. You may be able to find some local banks that do it, but they're few and far between. And especially if they don't have a foundation, it's pretty tough, because they depreciate so fast.
Right. Yeah. And even if you can get lending, it might be a really high interest rate.
Yeah.
Or a lot more down. I know it's a challenge for us. Like, you know, we help people get into home ownership through rent to own, through leases with options to buy. And we either have to, we and our investors have to pay cash or have that high interest rate. And then down the road, when our buyers get ready to buy it, they've got to be able to get a loan. So it's tough, but you know, it's an affordable product, but there's challenges to that also.
Yeah. It would, you know, it's a cost-effective way, like you said, affordable, that would help a lot of the housing demand in a lot of different areas. But, you know, from our lender's perspective, I can understand the risk and why they wouldn't want to do it. I do like the model of, like, if you owned a good amount of land and you could build them pretty cheap, you know, turning that into like a short-term, mid-term rental scenario. I think they it seems like a very attractive model like that. But then again, you're really just talking about an RV park in the same breath, right? It's more or less the same thing.
Cool. I'm just reading my notes here too. It's, they had some suggestions for things, alternative financing. So personal loans, shorter terms, higher interest rates, like I mentioned, RV loans, with terms up to 20 years, builder linked financing, home equity loans, or even credit cards with high limits. So,
yeah, I mean, it's $50,000, right? You could probably put it on a credit card.
Yeah,
that's kind of crazy. There's your mortgage payment, which was a low interest rate credit card.
Yeah. Hey, let's jump into the next one from Benzinga again. Reality TV star Tarek El Moussa's proposed real estate development is emblematic of the Los Angeles housing crisis. Hey, California again. So he's got this North Hollywood project, a $50 million luxury development. And the problem here is that they're looking to replace some bungalows and single family homes, which are currently rent controlled. We're kind of in the affordable housing area. So it's going the wrong way for where we need it to go, you know, in general. And I was saying too, oh gosh, what was it? Some of these properties were like in the multiple millions. I forget. Where the hell? I don't see my notes. Anyway.
Yeah, I've been following the story a little bit. I like Tarek El Moussa. He's somebody I follow because I like the way he does investments, and obviously he's obviously a celebrity as well. But I've been seeing a little bit about the story, and it's a tough situation. I guess a lot of the people are refusing to leave the property, and they want to start doing work, but they can't. So they're kind of like at the standstill because people are just refusing to leave. And, it's a tough situation. I get it. You need, I understand why you want to have rent control from one aspect, because cost of living is so high and it's getting out of control for a lot of people in this country. But, there's only so much opportunities to renovate properties down there. And, and if you're trying to be an investor to renovate or build or anything else, you have to raise the rents because there's no money to be made doing it any other way. It's tough.
It's supply and demand. Supply and demand, right?
Supply and demand, yeah.
But, they also mentioned a law called the Ellis Act. That's a loophole for landlords to buy out tenants. I don't know how that all works, but it's helping these guys put together these kind of projects. And
yeah, Tarek's a brave soul. He's buying houses out in Oklahoma for dirt cheap and renovating them and turning them into rental properties. I don't know. That seems a lot easier to me than dealing with any of this stuff. But he's probably into everything. So it's just one of many, many things he's got going on. But I feel bad. It's tough. Investing all those millions of dollars and just sitting there stuck.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Ethan?
No, I just know he's a celebrity. I don't really know much about his projects.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's take a break to learn from one of our sponsors.
Hey, it's me, Antonio Holman, founder of United States Real Estate Investor and producer of This Month in Real Estate Investing. Are you ready to ignite your financial freedom with what has been called the hottest REI strategy around? Or should I say strategies? Enter Jason Palliser's 2-day investment blueprint, where you will learn the secrets that the real estate investing community doesn't know because they never had a reason to before. With Jason's 2-day investment blueprint, you will learn how to tackle real estate deals with over 40 different strategies, which means your chances of losing another deal nearly disappears completely. In Jason's 2-day life transformation intensive, you will learn how to generate more deals, close deals faster, win more deals over other investors, multiply your real estate deal strategies, and much more. Jason's 2-day investment blueprint can help you grow your REI business to 6 and 7 figures faster with much less aggravation. If you want to learn how to invest in any market in the United States, even the tough markets, and close multiple deals per month, visit 2dayblueprint.com. That's the number 2dayblueprint.com. And make sure you tell them you heard it here on This Month in Real Estate Investing. Don't believe the no more good deals hype and visit 2dayblueprint.com today. Now back to James with This Month in Real Estate Investing.
All right, let's get back to the news. Guess where this next news item is from? California.
That's your friend today.
What is going on here? From United States Real Estate Investor, truth exposed, Silicon Valley titans orchestrating an $800 million land heist. How's that for a title? I guess there's a lot of secrecy going on here, but there's some rural land that there's a handful of kind of high profile people trying to buy and develop. So could be good economic gains, social transformations it talks about, but it could be risky to the environment and social inequality. So it's a double-edged sword. Any comments on that, guys?
Not really, not on my side.
Cool. I don't really know much about this other than, you know, what we read. You know, I think it says something here about, you know, it symbolizes a landmark moment in the overlap of technology and real estate sectors. Be interesting if you know, they're meaning that some of these big tech companies out there are going to start acquiring real estate. You know, obviously McDonald's, one of the biggest franchises in the world, as we know, has been very successful for lots of reasons, but you know, they contribute a lot of their wealth to actually owning the real estate where their stores are located. So I wonder if this is just a way to, you know, acquire more wealth through the acquiring land and then have an ownership on what you want to do with that, or there's something more involved where some of these people are, you know, people from out of our country trying to acquire land here. I don't really know. Sounds like something that's way over my knowledge.
That's above our pay grade.
Yeah, exactly. There it is.
Right, let's jump to the next one then. From United States Real Estate Investor, Miami. Ah, outside California. Miami real estate broker jailed for using COVID-19 aid on luxuries. Daniela Rendon, a Miami real estate broker, has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for wire fraud after misusing $381,000 in PPP funds. She got herself into trouble.
That's not surprising. The federal government, like if it's a dollar, they might put you in jail. Like the IRS, you know?
Well, I think it depends who you are, though.
Yeah, she leased a Bentley, a luxury apartment, had some cosmetic procedures.
Living it up.
Oh boy.
That's like, thank you, COVID.
Well, hey, when she goes to jail, she's gonna look real good. She'll be the best looking one there.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe that was her plan all along. You know, get some work done, go into jail, you know, meet Mr. Forever after that. Who knows? Or Miss Forever, whoever. Yeah, crazy. I'm surprised we don't hear about this a lot more because they were giving it away so easily. You know, we got the PPP as well. We haven't had any audits approved where I'm probably jinxing myself by saying this. We haven't had any audits come through to see where we spent the money on, although we, you know, we did spend it all on our business stuff. But I'm not surprised if there's not a lot more of this going on. They were just giving money away during that time.
Yeah. I was surprised. I mean, $381,000. What was she doing as part of her brokering business that she was able to collect that much?
That was a lot. Yeah.
Other thing that pissed me off, she only was ordered to repay $198,000 of that. Why not make her pay the $381 plus? Like, what the hell?
Listen, if there was logic behind everything, right? That's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know. We maxed out the SBA loan for us at, you know, 150K. I didn't know it went even higher than that. So she must have obviously shown, but maybe it was the EIDL loans that helped her out quite a bit to get over to that high number. But, you know, maybe they feel like, hey, you're going to go away 3.5 years, keep the extra couple hundred thousand. No big deal. We'll call it even.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, that emboldens people and they're like, yeah, I can get away with it. Although, that's still a 3.5 years in prison if she does that. Yeah. That's a stinger. I mean, they
should probably be out in 6 months.
Right? Well, I got out of work, so.
And face work done for 6 months of easy time. It was no big deal. It was on a penitentiary down by the coast. It was fine.
Oh, the other thing in the article, it said 17% of PPP and EIDL loans were obtained fraudulently.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Wait, James, say that percentage again.
17% were of those loans were fraudulent.
Okay. That's a pretty shockingly high ratio.
Yeah. A lot of people sticking their necks out.
17%. That's like 1 out of 5. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it could be higher. They probably don't know everybody yet.
Yeah, it might be like 30% next year when they've started looking into it more.
Right. Yeah. If they've got the resources to even look into it, right?
Well, that's what all the IRS hires are for, right?
So it sounds like we need to invest in prisons.
There you go. Better than California.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, let's jump into the next one. So again, from United States Real Estate Investor, Divvy Homes turmoil, third round of layoffs, rock prop tech industry amid soaring interest rates. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Divvy. I am because they do the same thing that we do with our business. We help people get into homes through rent-to-own programs. And Divvy is a, besides Home Partners of America, one of the biggest ones. But three rounds of layoffs, that is a big shift, which makes me a little freaked out. I guess they're shedding 94 employees, it says.
But so, are they like a public, like hedge fund type buyer?
Yeah.
So, you know, they probably were overspending during that time, like Zillow was with their big house buying thing, and they probably got caught, you know, losing a lot of money.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, like, Home Partners, I'm in some groups because I'm certified with those companies, so I know how their programs work. So I'm in some groups where there's a lot of other agents saying they're lowballing on these offers because they'll buy something that's on market. Like we buy off market too, but they'll lowball because they don't want to get pinched overpaying for something as the market shifts. So I get that. So that's a problem. And then interest rates, you know, that's hurting everybody. Same with them. You know, I don't know the back end part of their financing. Like Home Partners is backed by BlackRock. I don't know if they're paying, holding all that in cash, or if they're getting loans, bank loans, in addition to a down payment like we do. So sounds like that's probably the case with Divvy, if interest rates are affecting their business. So,
yeah, congratulations, Jerome Powell. What you're doing is working. People are losing their jobs, so you can stop raising interest rates now.
Well, they wanted a recession, right? So they've got it. I don't know. I mean, I know hedge fund, I don't really know much about Divvy Homes and that model, but I know the Zillow thing kind of fell apart. And I know some of the markets we work in, like, you know, some of those large home buying companies and hedge funds were not buying for a while, but they are now actively buying again. Mm-hmm. So be curious to see what happens there. But I'm not surprised that a company like that is struggling. It's crazy. You know, I guess if they're buying right, they'd probably be okay. So there's probably more to it. Like you said, they're probably something to do with the interest rates.
Yeah.
I actually have a friend that works at a pretty prominent real estate firm, and it's a really good friend of mine. So he's always telling me about his experiences with the firm and stuff. And these guys are really weird. So they lay people off, and then they lay people off again the next week, and then they do it again the next week. So, like, literally these people never learn how to do layoffs. You're supposed to do one big cut and a deep cut. You are not supposed to be laying people off every week. Like, that's just weird. And it makes everybody apply for new jobs and like, just always fearful about being cut the next week. It's just bizarre.
Sounds like a lovely place to work.
Yep. So that's why probably a lot of people there are not really interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, those low offers, I get that. And they're not just protecting themselves. Because the end goal, and some of these big companies have a bad reputation for really not helping people get into home ownership. And I say that because you look at overpaying for a house now, like Divvy buys it now, and then an end buyer needs to buy it in the future. That house has to appraise.
Sure.
So if it doesn't appraise, or maybe it's worth more and they've got to come up with an appraisal gap, you know, pay more for the house to make it work. You're putting that buyer in a bad position in the future. So even though it's self-interest for Divvy, the company, it's also protecting down the line for that end buyer. So
yeah, good point.
Yeah. You know, another thing they pointed out is Divvy's been criticized for having above average monthly rent.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah. And I've heard that, like, compared, like, I talked to a lot of other agents that bring their clients to Divvy and Home Partners, and Divvy's generally pretty much is higher. Part of that, though, is getting into the weeds a little bit. They have like a forced savings plan, rent credits. So say monthly rent, market rent's 2,000. If they only put down, say, 1% as their option fee, Divvy may have them pay an extra $200 a month, as an example. So they're paying $2,200. That $200 is being set aside. It's like a forced savings plan, so that when they go to get their loan in the future, they've got, say, 3.5% saved up for an FHA loan. Because if they have only got 1% put aside initially, they've got to save another 2.5 or more, right? Yeah. Plus closing costs. So they're that higher rent, it's not, you got to look at the big picture. They're forcing those buyers to save that to protect themselves. So
right. So they can buy in a few years rather than dragging it out for years. Because we all know if you have the money, you'll spend the money. A lot of people don't save money. So that makes
exactly
sense. Typically the model rent own is higher cost per living anyway on a monthly rent anyway compared to your something you're gonna rent to not own. So yeah. But I like that model. Putting savings aside, I think that's a pretty smart idea.
Yeah. This turned into a teaching moment.
Who says you can't learn from podcasts?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I love this show. Like, we all learn from each other and share what we know. Our next news item from Las Vegas News 3. Las Vegas ranks highest in home foreclosures across the country.
That surprises me.
It does.
It does. I know, it talks a little bit in the article, and sorry to interrupt, but, you know, I'm sure they were hit pretty hard with, you know, the COVID closures and everything else. But, you know, I always just think of Las Vegas as kind of like a booming economy, and I'm surprised they have so many foreclosures out there. I was surprised to see that.
Gotcha. I think, well, from what I've heard, it does go up and down, kind of boom and bust. But according to the article, COVID did really hurt them. You know, they shut down and it's such a tourist economy.
Yeah.
Like, makes sense that they really got crushed.
I was just in Las Vegas this January and it looked great. I mean, tons of people were out and about. People were overpaying for things, lots of tourists. I'm surprised because I think the economy's done fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it bounced back. Now they got self-driving taxi cars and stuff all over the place there. It's wild.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people leave L.A. To go there, you know, because of the tax savings and everything else. And they're building a lot of, like, high-end homes out in that area as well. And, you know, some of those towns like Henderson and stuff like that, those rural areas are booming really well. And some of, you know, investors do really well out there. I know, like, BlackRock and a lot of those hedge fund buyers, they buy a ton of properties up around that area.
Yeah.
They own so much property up there. I was surprised that alone doesn't prevent high foreclosures.
Yeah. I know Antonio, our producer behind the scenes, he's moving there pretty soon. And I could see some opportunities. I mean, if there's a wave of foreclosures and it is a boom and bust kind of town, biding his time or maybe even buying pretty soon could be beneficial.
But, you know, ranking highest in home foreclosures across the country doesn't mean there's actually a lot of foreclosures either, because right now, like, historically, foreclosures are pretty low across the country. Prior to, like, COVID, I mean, they were much, much higher before COVID than they have been post-COVID. So, you know, we're still seeing really, really low foreclosures in the markets that we are in. And people are like, it's up 100% from last year. I'm like, wait, it went from four foreclosures to eight? Wow, great job. But they're still really, really low. So, you know, it's a headline that pulls you in, but it could still be relatively low compared to what it has been in previous, you know, times in history.
Yeah, yeah, look at the data. Of course, you know, all these headlines are sensationalized.
Yeah.
You start looking at the data. Yeah, it said one in every 1,796 homes is facing foreclosure. I don't know how to compare that, but it seems actually pretty low.
Sounds pretty low to me.
Yeah. And it says not nearly as severe as 2007. So.
Well, I would hope not. You know, I was actually one of those people that was hit and I really hard during that recession. I almost lost everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started getting into real estate investing, I should say wholesaling at that time, and was able to save my house. One of my cash buyers on my list here today actually bought my house back then via short sale and prevented me from going into foreclosure. But, man, during that time, everyone, you know, seemed like there was houses for sale everywhere, people losing houses left and right. I'm sure Las Vegas is nothing like that. We'll probably, you know, knock on wood, we'll never see anything like that again. That was terrible.
Yeah. It's a rough one. Ethan, did you have anything to add to that?
No, not really.
All right, cool. Well, let's take another break for our next sponsor.
It's me again, Antonio Holman, founder of United States Real Estate Investor and producer of This Month in Real Estate Investing. You know, one of the best ways to increase your company's brand awareness and increase warm leads is to create written content online. But as we know, content creation can be very time consuming and not very cost effective when having to pay professional copywriting fees. It's time to use REI Content Packs. REI Content Packs, done for you content packs, give you the tools, flexibility, and cost-effective way to increase your brand's visibility and online presence without spending hours or even days stressing on what to create. REI Content Packs are a collection of high-quality, ready-made real estate blog articles exclusively created for the real estate investing industry. Can you imagine the possibilities if you could do 2 to 3 more deals per month without increasing your ad spend? REI Content Packs can help you do that. Can you imagine getting unlimited online traffic, increasing your Google ranking, getting more leads, and making more money? REI Content Packs can help you do that too. To get started increasing your brand's content and lessening your workload, head on over to thismonthinrealestateinvesting.com/REI Content Packs. That's thismonthinrealestateinvesting.com/REI Content Packs. It's time to get off the online marketing hamster wheel Try REI Content Packs today at thismonthinrealestateinvesting.com/REI Content Packs. Now back to James and This Month in Real Estate Investing.
All right, back to the show.
Hey guys, I'm so sorry. I have to leave in about 3 minutes if that for a different call, but then I can come back if you guys are still on.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
Go make that money, Ethan.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, thanks, Ethan.
Now we're really going to bore your audience because they're going to be stuck with just me.
And me.
They'll be like, that dude with that Boston accent, it was terrible. It was wicked bad. All we could hear was cock the car in the yard. I couldn't hear a damn thing he was saying.
Right on. So from Luxury Launches, Dolce & Gabbana's first ever real estate project is a 1,049-foot tall skyscraper in Miami with an elaborate gold crown. I guess they're partnering with JDS Development. And yeah, the sucker's 90 stories tall. And if you go search for that, you can see some pictures of what it's supposed to look like. It's kind of doesn't really look like a crown, but it is kind of gold and fancy looking.
Perfect for Miami.
Yeah, right. Just fit right in. Won't even notice it, right?
Exactly. Oh, it's just another gold crown on top of that building. There's a lot of those around here.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think it's great. I love when, I hope it does well. I mean, you're going to have high-end places in Miami, and what a name to have there, because only people who can buy that brand can afford to live there these days. So it sounds like a good fit.
Yeah. Yep.
Miami's super expensive.
Yeah. Let's see. It said it'll feature 259 fully turnkey 1-4 bedroom condos. I was confusing that other article. So this is the one where the prices were going to range from $3.5 million to $35 million.
Yeah.
That's
So we buy properties north of Miami in one of our markets down in Florida, and a lot of people have been just priced out of Miami and they're just moving to different parts of the state. I hear that all the time, but it's not hurting Miami because people with all that money are just moving there. So it's quite wild. I'm curious to see what it'll look like in another decade from now. Will it be like Beverly Hills where everything is just so fancy? It seems to be getting that way. And obviously you don't have to deal with some of the issues that you have in California when you have that kind of high-end real estate. So it looks like Miami and Palm City will, be two of the most expensive places in Florida to live. Quite wild.
Yeah. It listed out their names. I never knew who Dolce and Gabbana were. So Domenico Dolce and Stefano Gabbana. There you go.
Yeah.
The more you know.
Nothing that I would ever buy or want to buy. I can tell you that much. That's why we don't know those names very well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm basically a redneck from Alaska. Like, it's flannel.
Yeah. I'm a small boy from New Hampshire. So.
Yeah. All right. From Benzinga. These banks are going to fail. Says Kevin O'Leary. He warns that commercial real estate collapse will have dire consequences. And here are his proposed solutions, it says. For people that don't know who Kevin O'Leary is, he's a Shark Tank star.
Mr. Wonderful.
Mr. Wonderful. I love him. He's a personality.
He sure is. He's done great for himself.
Yep. And he didn't really say much new. He advocates for repurposing vacant office spaces into other uses like climate controlled storage or condos. Hey, it acknowledges there are zoning challenges, which you brought up, and suggests maybe demolishing and rebuilding data centers is one thing he threw out.
So, great idea. Always need more data.
Yeah. We're saving high pixel count photos on our phones. It's got to be stored somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. TikTok videos.
Exactly.
It takes up space.
I follow Ken McElroy, and he talks a lot about this because he's a, you know, he's a very famous investor for the people listening who maybe don't know. Yeah. He's been doing this a really long time because he's under the, you know, Rich Dad umbrella, but he does a lot in the commercial real estate space, and he talks a lot about it on his podcast. And, yeah, and the commercial space is tough. You know, it was tough to begin with. And I think obviously COVID completely changed the landscape of that forever. You know, even though people are going back to offices, you know, even with the continue improvement in online capabilities, just brick and mortars are struggling. You know, I read yesterday that, you know, CVS is going to be closing like 900 stores in the next year. Rite Aid is one of them again. Walgreens may be filing Chapter 11 to because they owe like $2.2 billion. You know, these brick and mortars are struggling to get by, and that's been affected by COVID. And it's really, if it wasn't for the vaccine, they probably would have already fallen a couple of years ago. The vaccine has like prolonged this to kind of save them a little bit. You know, how many office spaces you see now that are just sitting there vacant because, you know, retail space is so expensive and everybody works at a desktop. There's really no reason really to go in the office anymore. So you can keep your costs low, keep, you know, even if your production isn't as great, bet you the cost of not having retail space still outweighs the, you know, the production loss. So, you know, it's tough, and I don't think they're going to make any changes. I think it would be great to see it change for housing as well because of the need. But, you know, I just think the red tape and the political landscape won't allow that. It's going to be really tough for that to happen. And, yeah, if I was a commercial real estate owner, I'd be very, very nervous. It's a lot of money, you know. Retail space, anything like plazas, unless you're able to have enough long-term leases to overcome it, it's a risky endeavor these days.
Yeah. One comment we have is the massive store theft around the country doesn't help brick and mortar either.
No. And on top of that, again, not to hop on California, but California now has a rule that employers can't tell their employees to stop theft or shoplifters anymore. Not that I would want any of my employees doing it anyway, because it's too dangerous, but
right.
You know, legally you can't tell them to do that anymore. So basically people just come and steal and there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, it's tough. Yeah. Commercial space is going to be changing a lot.
Yep. All right, next news from Business Insider. Home prices could jump 5% in the next 12 months as high rates freeze the housing market, Zillow economists say. I'm always skeptical with Zillow, you know.
As you should be.
Right? Like, well, they shut down their iBuyer program because they didn't know what the hell they were doing. Overpaying. I'm sure their investors are very upset. But they kind of owned the world there for a while. So,
yeah, I think, you know, I don't think the interest, I mean, I think the interest rates will play a factor, but I think this is just more about low inventory. I know your market was hit pretty hard when the interest rates originally spiked up, because I know some house flippers out in that area that were hit really, really hard during that time. And I'm hoping Denver's turned around. You can speak for that compared to, you know, a year ago. But we were told here, like, oh my God, we've reached the highest values in New Hampshire and Massachusetts, and we're going to see it. And then, you know, here we are a year later. And rather than going down 8 to 12%, which we thought may happen, I mean, we're still higher than we've ever been. I mean, our average sale price is much higher than last year. And last year was an all-time high. So the interest rates haven't affected us at all. And it's really just been driven by just lack of inventory, low volume. A lot of the buyers, new home buyers, you know, who are just signing out aren't doing it, as buying as many houses. But there's still a lot of cash buyers out there, a lot of people who have lot of equity in their home. You know, they've been sitting on it for 10, 15, 20 years. They have a lot of cash to bring to the table. And just the lack of inventory is still driving rates really, you know, driving prices up really high. You know, I know they froze the interest rates. We all anticipate probably one more hike this year, but you know, interest rates are going to probably stay there for quite a while unless they do crazy things over this next election year, which would be interesting to see. But until the lack of inventory changes, I don't really see prices going down that much unless we go into this bad recession and like people have no money, which could happen.
Yep. You nailed it. Yeah, it's tough. We're definitely in Denver seeing it's not a seller's market like it was. It's like I'm helping everybody sell that condo. And I listed another nice townhome a while back, and people, both of these cases, they bought in 2021, had it for a year or two. And they thought, oh, we're going to get this crazy high price. No, the market shifted. They're coming out break even, maybe a little above, just depending on how much.
Yeah. You know, it's very market driven though, because, here in New England, there's certain areas that are just, if you own a property a year ago, you already have tons of equity. Especially small multifamilies are doing a killing out here. We're seeing price points over $1 million, really struggling. The average house out here is probably about $450,000 right now. If you're in Boston or some of these really higher end areas, $1 million is the average price. So those are still selling well. But outside of that, the higher end homes have slowed down quite a bit. But your average home is still selling quite really fast. Same with Florida. I know in upstate New York, we saw a little bit of things slow down, but not crazy, but I would say that initially when the interest rates went up here, everybody was just like, it's always that initial panic. It was like that with COVID, like the first 30, 60 days, everybody's like, I'm not buying anything. I don't know if the world's going to change and end. And then all of a sudden it just becomes a new norm and people just start, buying again. So I'm surprised Denver hasn't adjusted quite yet, honestly.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next one from the Rob Report. Mortgage Mogul's waterfront estate in South Florida just sold for a record $30 million. So this was the Ronald Leonard Jr., the CEO of Cross Country Mortgage, purchased his home for $23 million a little over 2 years ago. And now it just sold for $30. That's a nice little
nice spread for a couple of years, huh?
Yeah. Sounds like he knows what he's doing.
Florida and Texas are the two best appreciating states in the country right now. So if you own property there, you're probably doing pretty well. A lot of people are still moving there. Inventory is still low. One of the towns that we do business in, Port St. Lucie, had a 12% growth population just from 1 year ago. So people are driving to Florida like crazy and leaving some of these other states behind. Sorry, California. And, it's just helping out Texas and Florida. And, if you can own real estate there, you can do well. And obviously, as we're seeing in Miami and this guy, people still want to buy you $20, $30 million homes there, which is just crazy. So two good markets to be investing in my opinion, Florida and Texas.
Yep. They definitely pop up in the news all the time. And have you seen those animated maps showing the migration of people in the country?
Crazy.
Those are really interesting. I love how these data guys put together things like that. So you can kind of
One of the things you can do is a little life hack is you can go on U-Haul and you can check like all the one-way trips. And that shows you a lot of people leaving to certain areas. And you see like the large volume of people going to Florida, going to Texas and away from California, away from New York. Away from Chicago, Illinois, probably even away from the Denver area because it's getting too difficult in those areas to make it happen. There's easier ways to live somewhere else. And thanks to the power of the internet and COVID, people can work from home from anywhere. So you might as well go live somewhere warm and nice and pay less and have appreciating value in your home. Sounds like a win all the way around.
100%. Yep. Oh, I was just reading here on this home you sold. At a 200 bottle wine rack display, roof deck, and a dock that can accommodate a mega yacht. So I'm sure that's a nice place. 30 million gets you a lot.
It does. It does. Yeah. I can only imagine what it could get you. It's pretty wild. It's funny when you travel, you're always like, man, look at that nice house. And then you're like, you drive the next street over and that next house down the street is like, hold my beer. There's always something bigger and better around the corner. It's crazy how much money's out there and how much there is in real estate. It's mind-blowing at times.
It is. Yep.
$530 million can get you into a lot of trouble. Yeah, I'm sure. Oh, $30 million can get you into a lot of trouble. Yeah, I'm sure it can. Hopefully he spends that money wisely. I'm sure he will.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's jump into our fun news item. Japanese researchers say they used AI to try and translate the noise of clucking chickens and learn whether they're excited, hungry, or scared. So what they did, they used their AI and then on 80 chickens. So that was the test group. And then they collaborated with animal psychologists and veterinarians. I didn't know there was such a thing as animal psychologists. that jumped out at me. Anyway, they compared the results, and it sounded like the AI did pretty good figuring it out. And I guess there was another study where they did something similar with the emotional analysis research on animals like pigs. So
I think it's pretty cool. I read the article, and I never thought of using AI for those purposes, but you know, just with the advancement of technology and AI, with the things that we can now learn and do going forward to better our lives, it's pretty mind blowing. I mean, I'm sure AI is going to create the end of the world someday with Terminators and everything else. But until then, we may see a lot of cool things, and just, you know, learning, you know, about animals is one small thing, but I'm sure the ramifications and the knowledge that we learn from that will be quite exciting for the evolution of man. It's pretty neat.
Yeah. We're going to have an app that just translates what our animals are saying.
Great. Now when my dog needs to go potty, I'll really know that it really needs to go potty. Yeah. If they get one for the babies, even better, right? Do you need a diaper change? Do you have gas? Are you teething? Are you hungry? I need to know. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. You have conversations with your dog, right? It's like Google Translate when you're talking to somebody with a different language. You have AI translated with your dog. You talk about the football game or maybe the dog down the street.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting new world. Well, awesome. That is it for our show.
Woo!
Yeah, we did it.
I made it.
Jeremy, thanks for hanging in there, bro. That was awesome.
I just made pretend I was talking about stuff I had no idea what was going on. So you guys probably realize I had no idea what's going on, but I'm okay with that.
No, that was great. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Jason Palliser's 2-Day Investment Blueprint and REI Content Packs. Again, thanks to our guests, Jeremy Beland. That was right. Beland.
Yep, Beland.
And Ethan had to hop off. It was awesome having him on as well.
The guy is so smart. You know, he's probably made 7 figures in that 5 minutes he was been off this podcast. I'm really, really impressed with him.
Right. Yeah. He starts listening off of stuff. I'm like, whoa. And when he's a guarantor on deals.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he's been doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome. Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. Super fun. You know, but if anybody wants to reach out to me, catch me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Jeremy Beland. You can also check out REI Freedom if you guys have any interest in learning about off-market acquisitions. But, you know, listen, I'm all about collaboration, helping people get away from the golden handcuffs and find life and time freedom. And through real estate, it's changed my life. Anything I can do to help you along your journey, whether it's me or I can provide you in the right direction, maybe somebody else that can help you, I'd be happy to. And just love talking to people, man. So feel free to reach out if any of your listeners want to reach out to me. I'm very accessible.
Oh, fantastic. It's awesome to have you on. Again, I'm your host, James Brown, and I show people how to make safe double-digit returns through our hybrid investing model. Go to hybridinvestor.vip to learn more. Also, a huge thanks to our founder, our big cheese, Antonio Holman. Antonio Holman with the United States Real Estate Investor. Follow and subscribe to This Month in Real Estate Investing on YouTube. That helps us a lot. And go to youtube.com/@UnitedStatesREI or your favorite podcast app. Also, if you run across any interesting news, events, or good guest suggestions, feel free to share. Just email Antonio at UnitedStatesRealEstateInvestor.com. And remember, when one door closes, another door opens to financial freedom. Thanks.
Thank you. Drug case.